Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet, I climbed out up inside. The choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and whether you like it or not, you got to put up with me for the next 2 hours. Of course, you always got an on and off button on the old radio, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun. It's a car show. It's all about cars, although we get on sidetrack sometimes. But the idea is that you call in and tell us what kind of car problem you have, and we do the best we can to guide you as to what you need to do. We're not here to send you to a specific shop unless you ask us, and we don't make any money if we send you to a shop. So we're not doing this to pad our pockets at your expense. My guest this hour is Bryn Dietry. He's from Thunderbird Auto up in Sunrise, or Surprise, I should say. Surprise, I wrote it down wrong. How you doing, Bryn?
I'm real good. How about you, Mark?
Good, good, good. We're going to get that microphone a little close to you. All righty. And you're a service writing. You're the service guy up at Tom Fletcher's Thunderbird Auto.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Actually, Tom's moved me into basically a store manager position.
Okay. So. All righty. And so you have to run the techs.
Yes, sir.
As a tech that you used to be, does that give you a lot of training?
I don't know if it gives you a lot of training. It gives you the ability to figure out what they're going to whine about before you actually give them the ticket. So, yeah.
That'll win you points, but if you didn't use the word whine, I would have. It's okay. And I'm an old technician. We kind of evolve into management, and then if you're stupid, you go into your own shop. But we're going to start off real quick by doing some business, and I want to talk to you about Quality Transmission. They're in Tempe. And I'm really proud to tell you that I have 4 transmission shops in town here that I tell people that are the best. It's whether you use them or not is up to you. But Quality Transmission in Tempe is a great transmission shop. Bob is a Vietnam veteran. He flew jets and I guess he dropped bombs in Vietnam. He's an honest guy. He's a Boy Scout. And he's the kind of guy that you would trust no matter what. He is actually looking out for you. It's amazing, he tells me, that he has lots of people come in that have been told they need a transmission overhaul, and in fact, they need a solenoid, or they need an adjustment, or the front pump is bad, and we don't have to rebuild the whole transmission. So I'm excited because I get lots of calls from people who are happy with Quality Transmission. They do transmission work, they do clutch work, they do drive shaft, drive line, drive axles, repairs, CV boot replacements, anything to do with the back of the engine backwards, and any front-end work with respect to four-wheel drive, all-wheel drives. Quality Transmission is located on McClintock, north of University in Tempe. All righty, we're going to change the subject here. Oh, and the phone number, if you want to call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Bryn, have you ever been on a roundup before?
No.
Okay. A roundup is where there's a rancher, and let's just pretend he has 365 mother cows. He's going to have about 4 bulls. And do you know what mother cows and bulls make, right?
Other mother cows and bulls.
That's right. That's exactly right. So a roundup is that if you got 365 head of mother cows, then you're going to basically have a baby a day. So you have to bring the babies in. You have to inoculate them. You have to check them for, you know, all kinds of stuff. Typically, you're going to either tag their ears or brand them or something like that. So I belong to a group of cowboys called the Geezers, and we travel from ranch to ranch and do roundups for people. Sometimes we're handling 500 mother cows. Sometimes we're handling 50 mother cows. Just depends. A lot of ranchers will have, anywhere from 50 to 100 mother cows in one big pasture. So he'll have 6 pastures, and he'll say, hey, guys, I want to do pasture 2. So we ride out. We bring all the cows back into a central location, and then we separate them. We put the bulls in pen 1. And the mother cows in pen 2, and the babies that have been branded in pen 3, and then the newborns go in pen 4. That's sorting. That's the hardest part right there, because the cows don't necessarily want you to do what you want them to do. So I don't go on this trip, but they go on this trip and they take a guy named Joe Berdalski. Okay? We're going to call him Ski. Joe, the only horse he's ever ridden was the one at Walmart. But he has decided to tell Cowboy, his name's Dave, he tells Cowboy that whoever does the best job wins the Cowboy of the Year award. So they're out riding. Now, Joe is aggravating Cowboy all the time. And he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's along for the ride. Everybody else is working. Now, Cowboy is inside this big pen. Over here on the left, the story goes that there's two bulls fighting over here. Over here, there's a bunch of mothers fighting, and there's babies scurrying all over the place. And one thing leads to another. Cowboy's horse gets a little nervous and throws him on the ground. And Joe hoops it up. Because he says to everybody, as long as I can stay on my horse, then I win the Cowboy of the Year award. I'm not sure everybody agreed with him at that point, but he gets to make the rules, I guess. Never mind that he's riding a Shetland pony where he can stand up and the pony's in between his legs. Never mind that we've duct taped his feet underneath the horse so he can't slide off. Never mind all that. At the end of the day, Joe claims the Cowboy of the Year award. This was a roundup that they did in December. Of course, Cowboy's a gentleman, a true gentleman. He doesn't say anything. His pride's a little hurt. He hit the ground. He understands. The cows are processed. Everybody's on their way home. So Cowboy gets this great idea. Cowboy is a metal worker. Now, do you know that picture a big tray that a turkey would be on?
Sure.
A big tray. Cowboy takes a big piece of sheet metal that goes from one hip to the other. And from top to bottom, it's about 8 inches, with your belly button being right at the middle. And he decorates that with letters that says Cowboy of the Year. He puts a loop on the left side for the belt, and then he puts a hook on the right side. And he tells everybody on a Friday night get-together that he has a present for the Cowboy of the Year. And he gives Joe this giant belt buckle. Well, Joe wears this every once in a while, and you've never seen a belt buckle as big as this one. And he's claimed the Cowboy of the Year for the last 2 or 3 years because nobody's challenged him, which means nobody else has fallen off their horse. Mm-hmm. That's what it basically were. So Joe has been aggravating all of us, and so I think they're going to take him out to a roundup, and unbeknownst to him, they're going to give him a real rank stallion to ride. And within about the first 3 or 4 minutes, that duct tape will come off, and he'll end up on the ground, and then he'll have to give that belt buckle to somebody else. But that's something that just happened recently. And Joe now is driving for the city of, I think it's Queen Creek or Chandler. He's driving a school bus there. So I think we're getting ready to give him a school bus driver award.
Well, that's almost like a roundup all in itself, being a bus driver for
kids. Oh, it is. So. Oh, it is. This morning he said he picked up like 80 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the children wasn't paying attention, and Joe was saying sit down, and something happened, and I guess he hit his mouth or his face on the bar in front of him, and I guess there was blood. I guess there was no stitches. It was just, you know, he had a fat lip because he wasn't paying attention, and he wasn't sitting down like he was supposed to. So Joe got called in, I don't know. What do you think about this advice? This morning at coffee, all the cowboys are there, and one of the guys said, when you got called in, because one of your students was delivered to the school with blood, why didn't you say to the person that was chewing on you, but I got 79 of them here, okay? I'm not sure he's going to use that. But I just want to tell everybody that Joe Berdalski is Cowboy of the Year, and nobody can dispute it. Just ask him to see what kind of horse he rides. And he does practice at the Walmart up on Elliott and the Priest every once in a while, but he rides pretty hard. But we do it like our grandfathers used to do it. No motorcycles, no mm-hmm. quads, horseback, ropes. And when you're sorting them on your horse. And when you break up a couple of bulls, you're doing it with your horse. And what my job is I sit in this. I'm in this square box area that might be 12 by 12. There's a door north, south, east, west.
Mm-hmm.
There's a post in the middle. You know what the post in the middle's for?
I have no idea.
My protection.
Oh, there you go.
I have to be able to get up on that post. Now, door number one, they'll give me 3 or 4 cows, babies, whatever. My job is to get the cows through door number two, the mothers through door number two, and if the babies are branded through number three, and if they're not branded through number four. So I'm sorting. and I'm in by myself because there's not room for two guys. Mm-hmm. If I get too lippy, or if whoever's in there gets too lippy, instead of getting two or three cows, which are easier to manage, they'll open the gate and put about 10 in there.
Flood you.
Yeah.
Good luck, pal. Yeah.
And you spend a whole lot of your time hugging that post up.
Exactly.
High. Yeah. So that's what we do for fun when we're not wrenching on cars. But when we talk about wrenching on cars, would you agree that communication is probably 100% of the success of a car in talking with the customer and getting the right direction?
Absolutely.
So when you get a guy that comes in and tells you to replace the starter, what do you say?
Well, my first question would be to him is why do you feel that you need the starter? What kind of problems are we experiencing with the car?
Well, I have a friend.
Obviously, it must not be starting correctly for some reason for you. What exactly is it that's going on?
Well, my brother, he works in dealership in Milwaukee, and he said that it was a starter.
Well, really, truthfully, what I think I'd like to do before I just arbitrarily take some money out of your pocket on a problem that may or may not fix your issue, I'd sure like to get it in and at least check that system out.
Okay.
Let's test it out. It could be just a relay that you're having a problem with if it's an intermittent issue.
But if he continues to argue with you, there comes a time, if you're like me, where you just say, you have two choices.
Yep.
You either say yes or no.
Exactly.
And what I say to him is I'm going to do the starter, but I want you to pay for it in advance. Because yep. If it doesn't work, I don't
As long want as you go away with the understanding that it may have the exact same issue you got going on right now, and thank you very much.
And you're not going to want... You want me to pay for it, but it wasn't my diagnosis.
Yep.
So, you know, that's who gets to pay for it. So that's one of the things that I tell people a lot is just ask them, is this a guess or a fix?
Yep.
And I like women because give you the symptoms every time. So we have a caller. Who's the caller?
It's Doug.
Doug, we're going to hold you, and you're going to be number one on the other side of this break because I've only got 32 seconds left in this break. So we're going to get to you, but if you'd like to join Doug... Brent and I are going to answer questions for this entire hour. We're done with the cowboy stories. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. Call in. Jeremy will answer the phone, and you're going to give him year, make, and model and what the symptoms are. And then he's going to transfer you to me, and we're going to just know your name. So Bryn Dietry from Thunderbird Auto, Mark Salem right here from KKNT, and we're at your service. 602-508-0960.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Our guest here is Bryn Dietry from Thunderbird Auto up in Surprise. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's has been in the Valley since 1967. The current owners, and for very many years, is Bob and Ellen Frisbee. They've owned and operated Larry Harker's since 1989. Their technicians have been with them for years and years and years, and they are a family. They are a trusted source for quality repairs, affordable prices in the Phoenix area. They're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. The area that they really do well for me is Camelback south to the 10 between the West 101 and I-17. That's a big area, but they do a wonderful job for the people in that area. That's Larry Harker's Auto. Doug, thank you for holding, buddy. How can I help you today?
Yeah, I have it's a 1984. It's a real oldie, but a goodie. 84 Chevy van, a G series. It's got like 425,000 miles on it, and it still runs. And it still runs pretty good. Only thing I've ever had done was a timing chain because they do get stretched.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about. I use a Valvoline 10W40 weight oil in that thing because it was leaking when I used 10W30. It was leaking oil, a little bit of oil spill at the seals,
mm-hmm.
and so I had to go to a heavier oil. But I wanted to ask you about oil additives or fuel additives or anything like that I could use on a regular basis because it's such an old vehicle that might help it out. It's a secondary vehicle, but okay. I do use it quite a bit for long travels because I can sleep in it, actually.
Okay. All right. Hey, Brent, if this was yours, what oil would you be using in it?
Well, certainly our climate out here supports you could definitely utilize even a little heavier weight oil. That's a much older vehicle at this point, like you said. I know from history, even a 20, 2050 is not going to create an issue for you here in Arizona with the climate that we have. But I think you're on the right track with that. You know, obviously, the thicker the oil, it's not going to leak near as much.
And I think too. Does it use any oil between oil changes?
It's not bad at all. It's just not really bad at all. Just okay. A little bit. It smokes a little bit. It's smoking. You know, when I stop for the traffic lights and such, I'm a little embarrassed by what's coming out the exhaust pipe.
Okay. All right.
But then it's a very clean older vehicle, and I guess people understand it's going to burn a little bit. But now, 420.
Okay. All right. Are you fouling any spark plugs?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, you'd know it because if you were consuming oil in one of the cylinders, you'd have at least one of the plugs, and you'd have a miss, and then you'd figure out it's number six, and you'd replace the plug or put a new plug in six, and you'd be back to normal. I guess the last question is, where are you going to travel? Give me a quick idea of where you travel the van.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I travel back and forth between Phoenix and Florida and Michigan.
Okay. Then that changes my mind. Does it change yours?
Yeah. Michigan, we definitely don't want to get into a 2050. And then your flow rate in the cold, you're going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, I
would say stick with your 1040 weight oil. Now, you asked about additives, so... How much does the vehicle sit? How long does it sit in between your travel times?
Not really a whole lot. Cause I drive it a lot, locally,
okay.
Just to keep it going.
Well, truthfully, there's no magic mystery fix in a bottle, you know, and I've never bought into that, there's a magic fix for anything that you pour into the car. My concern would be if you let it sit for a few months on end, especially out here in Arizona, you definitely want to put a fuel stabilizer in it.
Yeah, I agree. With that. I'll tell you what I think, too. I think when you're on the I-10 corridor, I'd be using 30 or 40 weight, just a straight weight, when you're on the I-10 corridor between Florida and California. I think when you start heading north into the colder country, I agree with Bryn. I'd go back to a 1040. I wouldn't put anything in there. I got to ask you this question. You got here with 400,000 miles. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Don't add anything to the crankcase. If you want to thicken it up, sure, STP or Morey's might be something. But I think if I was in Phoenix or the I-10 corridor, even the I-40 corridor, I'd be on a 40 weight. And as far as gasoline additives, I'm with Bryn. If you're going to store it, put some Stabil in the gas tank. But other than that, there's no magic potion. There's no magic lotion. What you're doing is good enough. And I think we can bring your oil consumption under control, and it may smoke a little less. And if you pull the plugs, my advice would be go one range hotter next time you do plugs, and that will help consume some of that smoke. But I think the 40 weight will actually enhance the cylinder's ability to wipe the cylinder of oil. So I think that's what I'd do if I were you, okay?
What about synthetic oil? Is that a bad idea? I had people tell me that synthetic oil wouldn't be good for an old vehicle.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Like Mobil 1.
Well, and you're going to be back into the same. The beauty of a synthetic oil is the flow rate, under extreme conditions. So when it's cold, it still flows very, very, very easily. You're going to be back into the situation that you were talking about with leaks and things like that.
Yeah.
And I know I tell a lot of my customers that, if you want to find your oil leaks to be able to repair them, then let's get a synthetic in there.
And I'm gonna take slightly different tilt. Your motor's too old for anything other than a 2050 or a 40.
Yeah.
And if you want to put a synthetic in there, it comes with the longer oil change intervals. So that's the real beauty. And synthetics will still be an oil at 60 below zero, where a conventional oil turns to a wax at 30 below zero.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to be in any kind of, especially if he's living in the van, you aren't going to be at 60 below zero.
No, absolutely not.
And so, the years ago it used to be that synthetics were leakers, but the problem, according to Valvoline, is that the seals didn't like the concoction of a man-made synthetic oil. Today, we have different seals, and we don't need to swell them up any, and they come with a swelling agent that causes the seals to swell just a tad, and that makes the problem that we used to have supposedly go away.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you, Doug. Thank you very much. Jeremy, we got anybody else?
We got someone calling in right now. Let me wrangle him.
All righty, go ahead. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to talk to us about your car, your boat, horse trailers. We're pretty good with tractors, RVs, motorcycles. How are you doing on motorcycles?
No.
Well, I'll tell you real quick while Jeremy's pulling this up.
You got 2 minutes, and Mike's ready to go.
All righty, Mike. Give us what you got, buddy.
Okay, it's a 2004 Chevrolet Trailblazer.
Okay.
About 107,000 miles. What it does is about twice a week, you'll get into it, and a real strong smell of gasoline. It doesn't seem to have any relationship to how full the fuel tank is. I had a couple of people look at it and couldn't figure anything out. Any thought?
I'm thinking.
Is there a check engine light on associated with this intermittently?
No.
Or?
No.
Okay.
No. We do have a problem with that occasionally, but it always seems to be just the gas cap isn't.
Okay. You know, I'm wondering, is this got the spider in it? Because it's an 04. So has it got the spider inside the intake manifold that sure. they've redone about 10 times that they've.
I think the 04 Trailblazer.
1 minute.
Is that a straight six cylinder?
It is a straight six.
Okay, yeah. So it doesn't have the. It's so not
that's
the
a
V6.
Different setup. It really sounds like you have an intermittent. You get an O ring, a seal, something that shrinks up at the right temperature,
uh-huh.
and allows the fuel pressure to kind of push a little of that out of there.
Well, but on hard throttle too, the fuel pressure regulator is going to shut down and boost its pressure.
Absolutely.
And if you're on it, then the pressure rises because it's trying to predict what you're going to do. I would think that he could just have somebody take a look.
Mm-hmm.
And look for the signs of an external gas leak that wouldn't turn on the engine light.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And look for around the injectors. And at the worst case scenario is you pull all six and put new injector seals in.
Seals, O-rings.
Yeah. And so that's really what you got, Mike. You got an external leak that's not turning on the gas, turn on the light, and it knows that. We'll be back right after this.
Steam and automobile, the metal monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
The dream of Henry Ford. I'm Mark Salem. Bryn Dietrich from Thunderbird Auto is my guest. He's up in Surprise. Bryn's been in the auto repair business for a very long time. He's a service manager for Thunderbird Auto. His boss is Tom, a good friend of mine, and Tom thinks the world of him. So if he thinks the world of Bryn, so do I. Bob, you're up next, buddy. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Take us to spark plugs. How do you know when you need a hotter plug or a colder plug? And also, how do you tell without calling a manufacturer which plugs are hotter and colder and so on? Help me out there. I'm going to hang up and listen, okay?
All right. Okay. All right. Well, the hotter plugs are typically one number above or below the other plug. So a 15Y, now I don't know, you have to look in the book, but a 15Y is going to be a tad hotter or colder than a 17Y, and you just got to look at the heat range, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
The other thing that we would want to do is unfortunately, that's where you have to rely on what they would call, quote, a parts professional.
Somebody that knows the books.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so almost all spark plugs will have a range. I mean, in the old Chevrolets, we used to start with a 12Y, if I remember right, with the long nose. It was a Champion 12Y.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would go to a hotter plug, and I think it went backwards. It was a 9 or a 10. And you go by the color. So if you pull the plug out and it's got some deposits on it that are either fuel or oil, you would typically step up one range. You run a risk of, if you step up at the wrong motor, then you'll get pinging, pre-ignition, and you'll have taken a step backwards. An expensive step. On a colder spark plug, this car is run real hard, like my wife does, if she's complaining about pre-ignition and I'm already burning super in it, I might put a colder plug in there to try to control some of the pre-ignition, knowing that the computer's doing its best, but it's not a match for my wife and her heavy foot.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of what it boils down to. I move people to a hotter plug when the plugs we take out are black, and they have, like I said, carbon deposits and oil deposits, then I step them up one heat range. Sometimes I don't ask, and I just do it, assuming that the next guy knows that I did it because it has a lot of miles on it.
Yeah.
And it's not something we do. I mean, when was the last time you probably stepped somebody up?
Not real often, especially in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, you used to have to really worry about heat ranges back when you had carbureted engines and things like that, because no matter how many times you tried to adjust those, you know, changing the altitude changes your fuel mixture and your air intake and everything.
Yep.
Computers do a wonderful amount of work when they're working correctly.
Yep.
Nowadays.
And you're right. I don't do it the same way. It's probably twice a year we'll step somebody up in a heat range, usually because we think it's what's in their best interest. It's not something that we do. The computer will take care of altitude, of moisture, of delivery and throttle and load and all that kind of stuff. So we do it on, I would say you'd probably mess with heat ranges in the 90s and the half of the 2000s, and that's about it. Anything newer than 2005, I doubt very seriously if you change it. Wayne, you're up next, buddy. How can we help you?
Well, I have a couple of questions. I'm associated with a ministry in Mexico, so we're taking vehicles and shelling them down there, and we're going to be taking a 2000 Chevrolet half-ton truck down there. And my question centers around lubrication. Obviously, when you're driving on dirt roads and what have you, you need to change oil more often, but give me a general overview, if you can, of other lubrication issues, whether it's different components in the drive system or wheel bearings or whatever. What should we look for? What should we do differently on something like that to keep the vehicle that's already got 225,000 miles running well?
Okay.
It runs well, it doesn't have any leaks, and it doesn't burn any oil, and so on. So
okay.
Engine, transmission, drivetrain, talk about lubrication.
Okay. I'm going to change your question, if you don't mind. Okay?
Go ahead.
Bryn, I'm going to go from Phoenix to a dirt road environment. Knowing what
right.
you know about the 2000 and newer cars, am I going to have a bunch more dirt in my oil in the engine on a dirt road than I am a highway road or in Phoenix?
Most likely.
Wait a minute, Bryn.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
And realistically, what's filtering that is of course your Your
air cleaner.
Yeah, but the oil is that's still a basically a sealed system.
It's a sealed system, and you have a PCV valve filter.
Exactly.
That as the PCV valve sucks on one side of the motor, clean air goes in on the other side, and there's a filter there.
1 minute.
So to answer your question specifically, for the engine, there's no change. Stay with whatever oil change got you there. You're fine. If you had a 76 truck, it'd be a different story. But these motors are sealed. So
okay.
Everybody wants to think that dust it makes – and that's perpetuated by people in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
Bryn and I were both shaking our heads saying no.
No, what you would be concerned more with is your air filter and filters.
And when we come back – you stay right there, Wayne, because I'm up against a break. When we come back, we'll address transmissions and differentials. The lube job is still going to be the lube job with an oil change, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The transmission's probably going to be at about 30,000-mile intervals,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to do the filter once and a flush the next time, filter once and a flush the next time. And your differentials, you're going to go to 40 to 60,000 and do a suck and refill or a drain and refill. 602-508-0960. When we come back, we'll finish up with Wayne. And Richard, you're next. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Bryn Dietrich from Thunderbird Auto Up and Surprise is here assisting me today. He's co-pilot. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. He's a full-serve shop that served the Deer Valley area since 1983. He's located at I-17 and Deer Valley. Family-owned operation, accurate repairs, reasonable prices. But I got an email. A guy has his car diagnosed with a wheel bearing problem. But another shop tells him it's a brake problem. He finds out it's definitely a wheel bearing problem, so he takes it to Action Auto, and he tells them, I think I have a brake problem. He says, I was so surprised when they called me back and they said, no, you don't. Your brakes are fine. You have a wheel bearing problem. He said, they didn't know that I'd already bid a wheel bearing through a bunch of other places, and I had bids from $300 to $400, and they came in at $326. He says, when I got my truck back, it was fixed. And it was fixed right. And he says, so as far as I'm concerned, Mark Salem, your credibility and Action Automotive being on your best car repair shop list has been verified. Those are the kind of emails I get about Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley. Honest repair. They do it right the first time. And if they don't do it right the first time, they'll fix it with a smile. Because we all make mistakes. All righty. Wayne.
Yes.
When we were talking about you taking it down to Mexico, I think a fuel filter is something that I want you to pay attention to. And fuel starvation problem in your truck is going to be, it'll do 46, but it won't do 47 very well.
So a substandard fuel flow will tell you. Now, it's not an idle problem. There's never been an idle problem in the world caused by a fuel filter. We don't know how clean the gasoline is down in Mexico. Some people say it's as clean as the United States. Some people say, oh, no. I don't know. I'd probably just kind of watch that. But the rest of the time, I agree with Bryn. The air filter, the PCV valve filter, that's about it. So you just keep doing what you're doing up in Phoenix, and you'll be fine down in Mexico.
Okay, again, on the transmission, what frequency, you say 30,000?
30,000, 35,000. You can go to 40. And then it has, and you said that the truck, how many miles did the truck have on it?
225,000.
Okay. Then I'd probably, we got to assume that the filter's been changed. And so what I recommend is you do the filter, and then the next service, you do a flush. Then you do the filter, and then you do a flush. With the filter, you get 3 or 4 quarts. With the flush, you get 10 to 12 quarts. And so they're both about priced the same, but with the filter, you're only going to change a third of the transmission fluid, and with the flush, you're changing it all. And that's what's I think is best in customers' best interest. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Richard, you're next. How can I help you?
Two problems. Actually, one is a definition, and the other is more technical.
Okay.
I have a 1966 Mustang with a 302 engine. And I was told that it has a stall converter.
Uh-huh.
And what is that? That's the definition I
want. You want it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, basically, all automatic transmissions have a stall speed in the converter. And basically what that is that's the speed when you come down to a stop that allows that to not continually pull against you to where it pulls you through a stoplight. And what it does is hydraulically, as the RPM increases, it fully engages that. Now, that stall speed can be changed all the way up to, even in racing, they have race converters that have a higher stall speed to where it doesn't give you the full engagement of the horsepower until a certain RPM. Some of the race ones are up at, you can have a 2,800 stall speed converter to where you don't really feel the punch when you step on the accelerator of the horsepower all the way to the rear end.
It's just kind of a locking. Where does it lock up? And a regular converter is going to lock up like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, lock. Mm-hmm. Okay? A stall converter is going to go 1, lock. it's going to connect the transmission or the engine to the rear end on your Mustang in the snap of a finger as opposed to a kind of a slide it into gear kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So better fuel economy, a little bit more power, and somebody paid between $200 and $800 for that stall converter.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I thought it had to do with speed, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
The second question is more technical, and this has a 4-barrel carburetor on it.
Okay.
And it kind of loads up, I guess, and black smoke comes out the back. And I was just wondering, is that the idle jet or what?
If it's coming out at idle, then your carburetor has three circuits. Idle circuit, cruise circuit, and hold on, Nelly, the 4 barrels are open.
Uh-huh.
So the question is when do we get the black smoke? Now, do you know if that's a Holley?
No, it's a regular Ford.
Ford Fomoco.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. A high float level would cause that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have high idle with this problem, which would signify the choke is still closed, do you have a good idle when this is happening?
Well, I don't have a good idle at all.
Okay.
And, whenever you get some RPMs behind it, the smoke goes away and,
okay.
It roars.
All right. Well, you can take the air filter off, can't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what I'd do if I was you. I would drive it around until it gets nice and warm. And then I'd take it home, put it in park, put the parking brake on, make sure the wife's nowhere close because if she slips into the drive, then you're history.
Well.
You're going to take a glove and put it on your right hand, and you're going to take the air filter off. And while it's sitting there idling, I want you to cup your hand over those front 2 barrels and slowly squeeze the air off.
Okay.
Now, Bryn, if he's squeezing the air off and he gets more black smoke and the idle gets worse, what would that typically say?
Well, I would say at that point, then we've kind of eliminated. I know where you're going with this as far as looking for vacuum leaks.
at that point, all of the parameters need to be set. Time, you know, you need to check all your base settings. Start with the basics: timing, the idle mixture, the float level, those type of things.
But if I shut off the air and it keeps getting richer, it's not a fuel supply problem. It's too much fuel.
Exactly.
On the other hand, if you cup off the air and you shut the air off and it smooths right out, then Bryn's right. You got a vacuum leak. So it's kind of, that gives you kind of a, I mean, it's a Fred Flintstone way to do it, but that's the way we always did it in the 70s, is just cup our hands over the carburetor. Yep. We need to know whether you're running lean or rich. Now, if I were you, there's lots of people in this town that can rebuild a carburetor and do a good job at it. Don't take yours off and buy a rebuild, and I'll tell you why. The real professionals know how to go in, fix the problem, and you have two, black smoke and a rough idle. Fix the problem, if it's a carburetor and not timing like Bryn says, and not create anything new. And that's the second part of always what's happened. You buy a rebuilt carburetor, you put it on. I got a good idle circuit. It idles nice and well, but it's got a bad hesitation, and it goes da-da-da-da-da-da when I open up the four barrels. Well, you just traded symptoms. So the you're not going to want some kid who is 26 years old that has an earring and a couple of tattoos working on your 66 Mustang carburetor. You need somebody with gray hair crawling out of their neck of their shirt.
Especially if he asks you, what's a carburetor?
Yeah. So, okay, did we get you?
Yeah.
All right, Richard. Thank you very much, buddy. Frank, okay. You're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, I got a 97 Jeep Cherokee, and it runs rough, kind of low speed. And they tell me it's the 302 sensors, and I, you know, have a hard time buying that one.
O2 sensors, huh? All of them. Was that the guy at AutoZone telling you that?
That was.
All right. Let me tell you something. Oh, now you got my panties all wadded up. You got my panties wadded up. Let me tell you something. I want you to pretend, Frank, you are an O2 sensor. You can only tell me rich or lean. Do you understand that? You're going to talk to me in just numbers. You're going to talk to me, you're going to say to me 1 when you're running lean, and you're going to say 9 when you're running rich. You with me?
Yes.
I'm going to pull the vacuum line off the brake booster. What are you going to tell me? I'm adding a whole bunch of air to the engine by pulling this vacuum line. I've created a huge vacuum line. Now, tell me, as an O2 sensor, what you need to tell me.
One
is lean, and 9 is rich. You're exactly right. Now, I'm going to plug that vacuum line back in, and I'm going to go over to the air intake system, and I'm going to put my gloved hand over the air intake system so I shut off a lot of the air. I'm going to make the motor run really, what's the number?
9.
Bit. That's it. That's how easy it is to check to see if the O2 sensors are talking to you. Here's the problem. The three-whiskered kid at AutoZone wouldn't know an oxygen sensor if it jumped up and hopped in his pocket. He is out there to sell parts. He knows that if he can sell you 3 oxygen sensors, you're going to spend $100 to $200 for 3 oxygen sensors. You're going to put them in, and if it doesn't fix your car, you're probably going to go back to him, and he's going to guess a mass airflow sensor for $200. Then if that isn't, it's CGR, and then the fuel filter, then the fuel pump. That's what's going to happen. Now, let me ask you a question. If all 3 oxygen sensors are stuck at lean, Bryn, they're all 3 stuck at lean, and we've got all kinds of O2 sensor lean codes.
Mm-hmm.
Could the fuel filter cause that problem?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. We had one the other day. Fuel filter. Yeah. So we fixed 3 bad oxygen sensors by replacing the fuel filter because it was restricting the flow of fuel. The computer wanted to turn the injectors on like a fire hose. So instead of going like this, tick, 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 the computer went like this. And the O2 sensors, it's saying to the O2 sensors, hey, do you see all that fuel line running at you? And the O2 sensor says, no, I don't. It's lean. It's lean. And so the computer keeps telling it, open up, open up, open up. Give me all you got. And the O2 sensors go, it's lean. So the three-whiskered kid looks at the code reader. This is a code reader. And he has the amazing ability to look at the code reader and say, you need 3 oxygen sensors, and he says it with really authority. Okay, so
and the beauty of that too is that there's no ramification for him making a wrong decision on that
because
too.
You're guessing on his diagnosis, and he's going to say, "Hey, I didn't tell you to buy him." So, and you know, it's not fair because people, I mean, I have to pull an air filter out a month because they don't think that, that the one that is in their car is either theirs or they don't think that it was that dirty. But if I make a mistake and put 302 sensors in a car for $300 and it doesn't fix the check engine light, I got to pull them back out. Mm. So he's there to sell parts. He's the three-whiskered kid that he wouldn't last a day in a shop like Bryn's got or like I've got. He doesn't know anything. You have to have a scanner to go in and look and talk to the O2 sensors. The other day we got a brand new scanner. I'm testing it. I don't own it. It's $40,000.
Wow.
And this is a Bluetooth device that you walk around the car and you push buttons to talk to the car and make it do things. So when we're doing a test on the evaporative system, I can open and close the valve, I can open and close the smoke, and I can sit in a chair and do it. And the computer will help me find out what's bad. So he's not going to have that $40,000 scanner out there in the parking lot. He has reader that you can buy. Bryn, help me out here. Have you got anything to clean up the mess I just made?
Well, realistically, what Mark's just basically to summarize telling you is he's making you shoot the messenger for another issue, basically. And it's very unlikely that all three oxygens at the exact same moment are going to have the exact same problem.
And one oxygen sensor is in front of the catalytic converter, and it's saying rich, 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 and the one on the back says lean, lean, lean. And if the one in the back says lean, 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 and the one in the front says lean, 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 then you have to see if the one in the front's telling the truth. And if it's not, and it should say rich, and it's really saying lean, then you only have one bad. You don't have two bad. You need to spend, Bryn, how much diagnostic time? Give me a range.
You should realistically be somewhere between $50 and $100.
And I'm saying $75 to $125. Yeah. You're going to pay to have somebody tell you exactly what it is, and that's cheaper than the guess. We're going to have to
1 minute.
We're going to wrap this up, but thank you, Frank, for bringing it up, and I'll never forgive you for wadding up my drawer so bad. But thank you very much. I hope you took that with the – my intention was is to do what's best in your best interest. I object to people going to the Walmart parking lot and having the guy outside with a stethoscope tell them that they have they need a heart transplant. I don't think that he's a real valid guy to be telling you. But then again, people do it every day, and I see them. You see them. Yeah. They come in, and I say to them, how much have you spent guessing? And they won't tell me, and I'll say, have you spent more than $125? Yes. Okay, well, I'm only going to charge you $125 because it's like the old saying, you know, I'm the last one to do it. 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. We've got another hour, Bryn. Thank you very much for spending your Saturday with me. If you're up near Surprise, Thunderbird Auto is a great place to go. Believe me, Thunderbird Auto is a great place to go. 602-508-0960. Bryn, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Ladies, are any of these symptoms
Well, good. Good morning. We're here for another hour. My name's Mark Salem, and I'm here to help you with your car questions and your car problems. All you have to do is call us, 602-508-0960. And frankly, we can fix anything except a crack of dawn and a broken heart, but I'm man enough to tell you that if I don't know the answer, I'll tell you that, and I'll tell you who to call that probably does know the answer. And it's not that I'm that smart, it's just that I have lots of friends that I respect their car ability, and it's important for you to know that I have your best interest in front of everybody else's. A lot of good repair shops are of the same thought process. What's sweeping our industry right now is that the service writers now have a new boss. It used to be that the service writers kind of danced to the music that the technicians played. It used to be that the service writers maybe only answered to the service manager, and his requirements were sales. Today, what I see is that a lot of shops are saying to the service writers, you don't work for me, you don't work for the technicians, you're there to protect my customer, you're there to represent my customer. So you know who gets in trouble if the customer's unhappy. So you make the customer happy and you hold the technician's feet to the fire. You run your own little business within my business, although I write your check. And that's kind of sweeping our industry, and I think it's a really good idea. Gil, do we got anybody on the caller?
We have William.
William, good morning to you. William, how can I help you today? William? Will you talk to me, William? Please talk to me, William.
Hold on, I'll see if I can try and get them.
Okay. Anybody else? We've got open lines available. We got four of them. So if you want to call us right now, 602-508-0960, Gil will answer your call, and we'll get you on the air just as quickly as you can. While he's getting William on the air, let me tell you about Phoenix Body Works. Phoenix Body Works is a great body shop, and they've been on my best car repair shops list for years and years and years. Greg May is the owner, and his staff has been servicing the Phoenix area since 1982. That's a long time. Phoenix Body Works offers free computerized estimates, a written lifetime warranty on both parts and labor. As the insurance claim professionals, Phoenix Body Works takes the hassle out of dealing with your insurance companies. They have ASE-certified technicians, which is the mechanical side. They have ICAR-certified technicians, which is the body shop and paint side. And they belong to the Better Business Bureau, and they have a great rating. Arizona law says it's your vehicle, and you, and only you, can choose the body shop you want to use. Your insurance company will tell you that they want you to use a body shop, but the law says you can take it anywhere you want. My suggestion is to always take it where you want, because you don't want the body shop to be beholden to the insurance company, because when the insurance company wants them to cut corners, then they're going to do it. And that's the best part of Phoenix Body Works is they have a good relationship with the insurance companies, and he's not going to feed you to the wolves.
Sal is your next call.
All righty. Sal, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I got a question. I've got a 2009 Subaru. It's my daughter's car. She took it in for service, and they told her that she needed the brake lines flushed and the power steering flushed, and they had done it at, you know, about 25,000 miles ago, and it's kind of early, but she really needed it done. She didn't have it done because she couldn't afford it, and I'm kind of thinking maybe they were trying to sell her something that she really didn't need.
Well, I don't know either, but let me tell you, let me think out loud for you, okay? First of all, I doubt very seriously if either one of those flushes is in the owner's manual, okay?
Right.
And the owner's manual is produced by the people who build the car, and our industry has a bad habit, a small group of the industry has a bad habit of creating new stuff. If you remember when fuel injection first came out in the 90s, everybody came out with a fuel injection flush machine, but none of that was in the owner's manual. And in fact, what we now know today is that we were damaging the windings on injectors instead of fixing the injectors. So here's the deal. The brake fluid flush should be done. Typically, the moisture content in the brake fluid exceeds the maximum allowed somewhere between 40 and 60,000 miles. And typically, that's around the first brake job.
Right.
So, and if I would have been there with your daughter, I would have pretended I'm stupid, and I would have said, what test did you run? How did you come to that conclusion? Have you ever heard the terminology odometer surfing?
Yeah.
That's all. It's there's nothing else but what it says on your odometer that tells me you need this done. The power steering fluid. If you take the power steering fluid dipstick out of the reservoir and you put it on a white piece of paper, just a dab, and it's
right.
going to turn into be about the size of a dime or a nickel. Then you put brand new fluid on that paper. That is what your daughter wanted to see. Come in and say, come with me. Dip here, touch here, dip here, touch here. You'll see that's brand new fluid. This is your old fluid. Look at the difference. This brown, this has metal flakes in it. This is red. This is clean. This is white. This is amber. It's good. See the difference? That's why I think it's in your best interest to flush the power steering system. But at 29,000 miles, give me a break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't know. I wasn't there, so I can't really condemn them, but I can tell you this much. I would hope that didn't come out of my shop. That would embarrass me. Because
I mean, he says he got 70% of the brakes left. So,
well,
I mean,
you ought to give her a big hug and a kiss, because she's not going to cost you a lot of money.
No,
no, the fact of the matter is you're still a long way from my parameter of 40 to 60. I'm going to do my mom's car between 40 and 60 because I know the moisture content and the boiling point of the brake fluid will be out of spec. And I have we don't have a scientific test for power steering fluid. The best you can hope for is a drop of two products on a piece of paper. You know what? As a matter of fact, many of the vendors now provide that piece of paper to us. and there's two little circles on it, and it says new and old. And it's an easy sell if you do it that way. The problem is if, I mean, you know, I'll tell you what I do to my technicians. I say to them, if you sell a power steering fluid leak, the first thing I'm going to do is go out to your personal car, and if your fluid is dirtier than the fluid that's in that customer's car, you're fired. If your shock absorbers are older than the customer's car, you're fired. I mean, really, I don't really say that because my guys are, we're a family, but that's how I feel. That's how I feel about it. So the answer to your question is I think she owes you over two hugs. Number one, she left without buying it. Number two, she's got 70% of her brakes left at 29,000 miles. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mark.
All righty. You bet yourself. Take care. All righty, Gil. We got anybody else?
Ron.
Ron? Ron, good morning, buddy.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm better than the average bear.
You know, I got a question. I'm kind of looking around, and I like the style of these older BMWs, mid-90s, 740 series.
Yeah.
And I've seen a couple of them. I have one from a neighbor that I kind of like, and that I have. Everybody is telling me to steer away from those, that if I have an electrical problem or if I have maybe some whatever it is, it can bury me, and I can get in deep more than the car.
You know, that's easy to say, but it's kind of hard to prove. Here's what I think about the top-end cars. I'm going to give you the best example I can give you. My older brother drove a Mercedes for 100 years. And every time he took it in, even for an oil change, the bill was $500. And I used to tease him. Hey, you going over to make their payment today? Oh, and he'd get mad at me. And I said, it's just an oil change, man. It's just $40, $50, full synthetic, $65. So, well, they found it. And I think that they replace parts appropriately. But they never, a part is never on the car long enough to break. so at the end of 100,000 miles, he says, yeah, well, I ain't never broke down. Well, hell no. They replaced your car at 100,000 miles. Of course you haven't broke down. I like the V8 BMWs. I like the 740s, I think 50s, 750. They have a 750. They might even have a 760. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like those. They're rocket ships. But you have two choices on the maintenance side. You can deal with preventative maintenance, or you can take the tilt of, I'm going to fix what's broken, only what's broke. The most important part of your purchase is the past maintenance records. There are lots of people out there that are buying cars at auctions. They're going to list them for sale. And Ron's going to show up, and he's going to say, do you have any maintenance records? And the guy's going to say, well, I'm here from Tennessee, and my dad died, and this is his car, and I just can't find any maintenance records on it. So, he always had it at the dealer. Well, which dealer? I don't know. I'm just selling the car. I'm going to head back home. That's what you're going to get. If you find the guy that has the gas log and a three-ring notebook of all of his receipts, that's the car you buy. That's the one you buy.
2 minutes.
But those cars don't really have a history of electrical problems then.
Well, let me tell you that BMW isn't more than like 2.5% of all the cars on the road. So I don't even know who is capable of answering that question. I want to tell you that the BMWs that I service have more brake problems than anything else. They're soft pads, and they do two things. They wear out real fast, and they dirty up the front wheels. If you put a rock hard pad on there, then they squeal like crazy, but they don't dirty up the front wheels, and they don't like you. So you got a soft pad, and you're going to replace them more often. I'm going to dirty up your front wheels, or you got a hard pad, and they're going to squeal every once in a while, and your wheels are clean. So take your pick. But I don't agree that the tie-in BMWs have any more or less electrical problems than any other car out there.
Really? Well, that's good to know. Yeah, it's a I think it's a 95, and it's a nice car, and it's nice. I still
Joe,
like the
next
lines of that.
We have 1 minute.
That car, and you know what? Though I'm going to ask him about those records.
Yeah,
that's a good good point.
There has to be records, because if there is no records, there's more to the story. And you always want to make sure you always see the title before you exchange cash to make sure it's not a salvage title. Because a salvage title, you knock two-thirds off the low book. So if the book on it is $15,000, that car's worth five.
Well, it's an elderly couple, and they've had the car for sale for quite a while, actually, but I thought they were asking like $5,500 for it. I think it has 120,000 miles on it. It's a real clean car.
$5,500, the car's worth $300 a month. At the end of 1 year, you've got $3,600 worth of use out of a $5,500 car. At the second year, that car doesn't owe you a dime. It's a Bic Ladder that lasted 2 years. Why wouldn't you take that deal?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish our conversation. And, Joe, you're next. We'll be right back.
Secretary of State.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. I'm your host, 602-508-0960. We got two lines open. We got Joe, Les, Harry. Joe, Les, and Harry. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. Quality Transmission is one of my favorite shops. All of the shops are my favorite. But he's the one that, in my opinion, has the most technically difficult job, because the transmission has 2,000 pieces. Some of them are 3,000 pieces. And they're not like they were the old days, because they have electronics, and the electronics shift the transmission. So now we have a situation where you not only have the transmission, but you've got all these other things that are making it operate, and you have to decide which is which. And Quality Transmission does a great job in doing that. Nothing's worse than to rebuild the transmission and have the customer tell you, I have the same symptoms. That is a bad deal. Never happens at Quality Transmission. They're on McClintock, north of University in Tempe. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive. And you can tell them Mark sent you. Don't make a dime on it, but I'm proud to tell you that they're a very good transmission shop. All right, Joe, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Yes, I'm going to get new front pads on my car.
Uh-huh.
And it's an old one, automobile. And they say that I can spend $15 more and get the new hardware with the new pads. Is that the best to do that?
I want to know how much they're quote. Well, first of all, let me tell you that the industry standard is a front brake job on your 01 Oldsmobile is going to be about $250, and that doesn't include rotors.
Yes.
Are you in that ballpark now?
No, they're going to turn the rotors, but...
I'm talking, they turn the rotors. It doesn't include new rotors.
Oh, no, it doesn't include new, but I've only got 56,000 miles on the car.
All right. Well, how much is the total ticket right now on the front end, on the front brakes?
Well, it's 100. I've got the new pads, and I'm going to get the new pads.
Okay.
And then the whole job, including changing the fluid in the radiator, is $144. Just to install the pads and change and flush the radiator.
Wow. I'm shaking my head. Here's what it is in the industry.
Yeah.
Are you going to bring the pads so he's not going to bill you for the pads?
Yeah, I'm going to bring them.
Okay. If the customer walks in with a set of pads, you still got $150 worth of labor to replace the pads, lube the calipers, clean up the calipers and the slides, install the pads, and turn the rotors. You still got $150.
Yeah.
Then you got another $100 to flush the cooling system. That includes coolant and all the labor.
Yeah.
So I'm at $250 where you're at $140.
Uh-huh.
So just make sure. But to answer your specific question, yes. It is never a bad idea to spend. And I would have, if you would have said to me, Mark, how much does a hardware kit cost for my 01 Oldsmobile? I would have guessed $20.
$15. Actually.
Okay, so $15 is fine. I say yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'll get those.
I just wanted to make sure you didn't have one of those $800 front brake jobs.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, this is a place that's been there for about 30 years, and they've got a good name.
Listen, I want to tell you something. If I had a dollar for every time I saw an $800 front brake job, I wouldn't be doing radio right now. I'd be kicking Mr. Trump out of his helicopter.
Yeah.
So
well, that fluid now that they're changing, it's not going to be the Dextron. I mean Dexcool.
Okay.
It's going to be some kind of universal type that goes in there.
As long as it has a bottle that has a name that you recognize, like Prestone or something like that, then that's totally acceptable.
Well, they said I forget the name of it. Some kind of universal thing that goes with most cars, like they said.
Okay, well, just have them throw the empty bottle, in your trunk so you can read it and see for yourself that it's a replacement for Dexcool.
Yeah.
So just tell him, just throw an empty bottle in my car for me, okay? Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You bet you, Joe. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. All righty, Les, you're up next, buddy.
Yeah, I've been seeing an advertisement for a piece of software that's supposed to give you more information about your car. And it you have to give them a VIN number to actually buy it.
Okay.
So it's car-specific, and it's several hundred, $600, $700, $800, depending upon the car, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Can you really do that with just a regular computer and a little piece of hardware?
Yes. What they're doing is they're going to give it's car-specific. So what they're going to do is they're going to pop up important parameters. Well, I don't know if they're important. They're going to pop up certain parameters on your computer screen. For instance, when you turn the key on in the morning but you don't go to start, it'll tell you that the coolant temperature is 55 degrees. Now, when you look at your mirror, what should the mirror say?
About 55 degrees.
Exactly. Man, that's how easy it is to fix cars if you just use your old noggin. Then it's going to say, is the oxygen sensors alive? No, they're not warm yet. Okay. Then it's going to say your throttle is 13%. So you reach down and you push the throttle all the way to the floor, and it should go to 90%, 95%. So it's going to pop up parameters. But here's the deal. When it says the mass airflow sensor is at 6 grams, is that good or bad?
I have no idea.
If the MAP sensor says that it's got 7.5 inches of vacuum, is that good or bad?
I don't know that either, yeah.
And the other 200 parameters are the same thing. If you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know what's good. Now, I know what you're talking about. The software is sponsored by parts vendors, and they're going to put, I haven't seen it yet, but they're going to put black, red, and green arrows in there. If you ask me or my previous guest, Bryn, to put arrow green and red stuff, we couldn't do it because cars are different.
Yeah, I understand.
So it's kind of nice, but buy it because you're interested in the technology. Buy it because this is something you'd like to learn about, but don't use it for something that's going to cost you more money. And besides that, you're paying a whole lot of money. You could probably buy a used scanner on Craigslist for about that much money, and it has the same stuff, except it won't have it all on one screen. You'll have to toggle through some screens.
Oh.
All righty?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you, buddy. Mm-hmm. And Harry, you're up next. Harry, how are you today?
Just fine. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your show.
Yeah,
I was kind of wondering, on your best car repair, have you ever had a dealer on any of your best car repair shops?
I have. One time. I had Henry Brown Chevrolet in Mesa. And when he moved to Gilbert, he didn't renew it. I'm still a fan of his. I still want my cars there. He wasn't removed for any dastardly thing. But, you know, I also have a problem in trying to control this animal that I've owned since 1988. Because I don't want to take a chain store that might have 20 shops because I believe that it's very difficult to control the quality of 20 shops. And I had to make a special vote amongst the members to bring S&S Tire in because they have 3 shops. And I'm proud to tell you that it was unanimous. And each one of the boys has a shop, which makes me feel better. So it's a little difficult, like Earnhardt. Earnhardt's a great guy. However, Earnhardt has what? 13 models of cars that he sells,
right.
And he has, I don't know, 9 to 13 dealerships. So if Tex came to me and said, you know, I want to be your, I'm going to say, Tex, I'm going to pony up $5,000 for all your unhappy customers times 13 dealerships, it isn't going to work. Because, folks, I on my website, I say if you have a bad time with one of my shops and the Better Business Bureau tells them to give you refund you money or fix your car and they don't, I will up to $5,000. Well, I can't possibly do 13 dealerships. So it's not because they're bad. The purpose of this at the very beginning, Harry, was this. The independent market is certainly one of the places that you should be aware of as you get your car fixed because there are certain reasons you have to go to the dealer. And one of them is that you have some weird problem that no one's ever seen before. There's no reason not to go to the dealers because those guys work on GMs every day of their life. So you wouldn't take it to an independent. But an independent may do something else better. So it's like the Gas Corner gas station. They used to fix flats. Harry, you stay right there because I haven't finished my conversation with you. We're going to take a break right now. 602-508-0960 if you want to call in. 602-508-0960.
Dream of Henry Ford.
My name is Mark Salem. I'm here at your service. The name of the show is Under the Hood here on the Patriot, KKNT, every Saturday from 10 to noon. Well, I'm here just for you. I'm here to guide you and to talk about your car repair problems. And, Harry, we were talking about dealerships. Do you have a relationship with a specific dealer?
No, not anymore.
Okay. And you'll remember the old days. If you had a flat tire on a Sunday, or if you needed a fan belt on a Sunday, then the corner gas station was the guy. But there are no more of those. And so you have four different, you used to have four different groups. You had the corner gas station, which was very convenient, quick, fast, easy. And they didn't do motors. They didn't do big stuff. They just did quick, fast, easy, and a lot of maintenance. Then you had the independent repair shop. The problem with the independent repairs back then was they came and went a lot, and so did your warranty.
Right.
And then you had the chain store. And the chain store is very valuable for their discounts, for their 1988 oil changes, as long as you go in understanding that that is, you're allowing them to do a shopping spree on your car, and you can say no three times in a row and leave and have them write it down what you need and not buy off on that increase in the sales ticket. Because the whole idea, and I've worked in those environments, the whole idea is that $19.95 needs to be $125 average ticket price, and that's everybody's responsibility. Then you have the dealers. Well, the dealers are good for warranties. The dealers are good for, if you have an aftermarket warranty, they sometimes handle that, sometimes they don't. But more important than anything else is when you open up the door and your radio station changes, that's a repair that you are best served at the dealership, because somebody there has seen and fixed that before. Plus, they have the technical wherewithal that we independents don't have. They have the ears of the engineers. They can make calls and go on websites we don't have access to. So I say to my mom, I say to my dad, I say to my family, you know, you should have a relationship at all of them. And they can all provide a service. Some may say, I just want to do a chain store. Okay, fine. So that's kind of the way we were built, starting from about 1988.
Okay.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you very much
for your response.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you sure can. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. It's a second, maybe even a third generation. Brian and Thelma run Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Stapley and Main Street, just east on the south side of the road. Stapley in Mesa, just east on the south side of the road. They are a fine couple. I say this and it embarrasses both of them, but Brian's exactly the kind of guy that you hope your daughter brings home someday. And Thelma is exactly the kind of woman you hope your son brings home someday. They are a fine, fine couple. Unlike my wife and myself, where if you get called into my office, you're going to leave 5 pounds less, and if you go into her office, you get a hug. Brian and Thelma share the responsibilities, and they work well together, as do many of the married couples that own and operate the shops on our list. You just can't really do better. They're very honest. They're very dependable. And if you need really good repair shop and you live in that area and you don't have one, or you want to compare yours to them, then stop by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Again, they're at Stapley and Main, just east. And you can tell them Mark sent you if you want. When it comes to car repair, there's a
2 minutes.
There's a transmission shop that I've got a lot of calls on. It's an ugly situation. Thank the Lord, it's not one of mine. Here's how it starts. This is the common denominator in three different cases. I took my car in. They said that I needed an overhaul. I did the overhaul, and I still have the problems. I've given them two or three chances. They couldn't fix it. In one of the three cases, they took it to a dealer. The dealer replaced the transmission with a new one, and the problem went away. Not one of them took the 3, 4, 5 minutes to look at the Better Business Bureau website, type in the name of the transmission shop, to find out that they have an F rating. Folks, you have to work really hard at being bad to get an F rating. You have to ignore everybody.
1 minute.
You have to ignore your customers. You have to ignore your vendors. The guy that runs this transmission shop is one dirty-shirted guy. and he just doesn't care. He's being sued by people, and he doesn't care. Do yourself a favor. Protect yourself. Three people went to him. Three people paid for a major overhaul, and three people still have the same symptoms. The first person had his transmission fixed, and now he's suing him. That doesn't matter, because if you look at the legal pages on the internet, he's been sued a bunch of times anyway. He doesn't care. So by the time you start suing people, it's not worth it anyway. But the bottom line is the information was available for free at the Better Business Bureau. That's all they had to do. If he doesn't have an A or an A+, you got to turn around and go somewhere else. Everybody gets a transmission overhaul at his shop. We'll be back.
Chase Lounge, backed into my spot at the driving shows. You know, a cargo light gives off a romantic glow. I never
have. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go till 12, and we're taking calls. 602-508-0960. Frank, you're right. I'm going to do one thing, and then we're going to go to you. Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell Road. Kurt and his staff are good guys. Kurt came to us and said, I'd like to apply to be on your best shop list. And I said, sure. And I remember when we ran him through our filter, everybody had really nice things to say about Kurt. The vendors. And here's the most important part. Some of the shops around him liked him. Now, that's happened only once before. There is, today as we speak, an import shop over in Tempe called Arizona Import. And there's five of my shops that surround him. And they all said yes. Not only do we use him, because he does a great job on imports, but we like him. That's really a badge of honor in our industry, is when the guys around you like you. So Kurt's one of those guys. You'll be hard-pressed to find the level of expertise and the auto repair technicians that Kurtz has. He does domestic, import, gas, diesel, and they offer great services, affordable prices, and they'll get you back onto the road as quickly as possible. So it's I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. If you need a shop, Kurt might be a good try for you. All righty, Frank, you're up, buddy. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. I've got a 01 Pontiac van, a minivan.
Okay.
And I was wondering about getting a transmission change. I've only got 58,000 miles on it. And I just wonder if it's necessary to have that transmission changed at that
time. Frank, have we done any transmission fluid or filters yet on 58,000 miles?
Well, I think it was done around 35,000 by the previous owner.
Okay.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it was.
All right. If you're real sure at 35, then I'd go to 65 and have a flush done, because hopefully they did the filter and the two or three quarts at 35.
Yes.
And then this time, we're going to disconnect two lines on your radiator. We're going to plug them into a machine, and we're going to force, you know, I think we use 15 to 20 quarts of oil to flush all the old stuff out, and you end up with all new stuff.
I see.
It's the only way to get all the fluid out. And the machine looks like two big tubes, and you put the old stuff, or the new stuff, in tube left, and the old stuff goes to tube right. And you just run it until what comes out is red and pretty as what's going in, and you shut the machine off.
Yeah.
And again, you're going to be in the $125 to $200 range, depending on the fluid and all that kind of jazz. But if you're sure, now, Frank, if you're not 100% sure that somebody's had the pan off, then I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to say, let's pull the pan and let's make sure that filter's been changed before. Because it throws the most clutch material, and it throws the most metal in the first 60,000 miles, because that's when the transmission's wearing in. After that, the byproducts of the transmission are far less. So we need to get the filter out in the first time, just to get all that metal and clutch material out of there as well.
Yeah. Would quality do that?
Oh, sure. Now, where do you live?
Well, not too far from Quality.
Oh, yeah. You go in there and tell Bob that... tell him, say, Mark Salem said you weren't the best guy in town, but I told him you were the closest, and so he gave me a $50 off coupon. You tell him that.
Is that right?
No, I'm not going to, but we're going to tell him that.
Okay.
and he's going to say, what? And then you can smile and say, I'm just teasing you.
Now, one other thing. As far as filters go, oil filters, are they all about the same, or are there better, one better than the other?
Well, they would have you believe that, and the answer is yes, there is some premium oil filters that have a micron difference. Otherwise, they're, you know, a micron is a millionth of an inch or something like that.
Yeah.
The idea is no one cares. You say, Mark, the most expensive car that you own, do you put anything other than a Wix or a Fram or a, you know, a, just a 199, 299 oil filter? And, and the answer is no, I don't. I use those filters. There are some filters that are in a box that I don't remember who they are. I don't recognize the name, and I stay away from those. But if it's got a name brand on it and it's one I recognize, then I'm shopping price.
Well, the man at Napa said that he wouldn't put a one started with an F on there. His. He says Wix is the best one that he gets.
You know, I don't want to deal with the guy at Napa. What I want to say to you is that there's only three main manufacturers of filters in the United States, and they all make everybody's. Wix is certainly one of them. Champ is another. And frankly, I don't know if I'd care. There's a lot of guys that think that Ford, the Fomoco or the Motorcraft oil filters, are the king of the roost. But in reality, Ford doesn't have a factory that makes only their oil filters. They buy from the cheapest vendor and they have them painted with the paint. Everybody does that. There is no such thing as a Honda spark plug. There's no such thing as Honda brake pads. There's no such thing as Honda, Toyota, Chevrolet, Ford, anything. It's all bought from the lowest bidder.
Well, that filter is so small, you wonder if it does any good. It's only about 3 inches tall.
Well, and you know something else? You bring up a good point, and your car is one of them. In the 90s and in the 2000s, there is oftentimes two filters. Now, a gray-haired guy is going to know this. There's going to be a short GM and a long GM. There's a fat GM and a skinny GM, and they are interchangeable. So the old grizzly guys, we know. But, you know, sometimes you're a little leery to do that, but if you've got an old guy that you say, hey, I got two filters, they're both of these are the same, you want the short one or the long one, the price is the same, and he goes, oh, I get more filtering with the long one, I'll take that. Okay, fine.
Better to get the long one.
Yeah. So a lot of people choose to do that if you have the option. But in reality, there's some Fords and some GMs, I don't know any other car maker that has that kind of option. And what you're doing is you're just going to look at the filter and you're going to find the thread pitch, you're going to find the gasket, and you're going to find the operating pressures, and you have to compare them in that fashion.
Well, I go 3,000 miles a year, and I change the oil twice a year.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that.
What?
I want you just to change the oil in May once a year. I want you to go through the summer with fresh oil, but I don't want you to change your oil every 1,500 miles. I'm going to save you $30, $40 right today because that oil, no matter what brand you buy, that oil will go 3,000 miles in 12 months. And it will protect you. I promise it will protect you. It's only begun to do it. It's called flowering. The oil is flowering. It's budding. It's blossoming. But you're draining out oil at 1,500 miles. I don't care that you've only gone 1,500 miles. That oil is good.
I see.
So just do it once a year, but do it in the beginning of the summer so you have fresh oil in the summer. Now, I have lots of older people from Ahwatukee and from some retirement communities. I have lots of widow ladies. I have lots of older married people that only drive 3,000 miles a year, and I have them on that schedule. Before my mom passed away, I had her on that schedule. So I'm using a conventional oil. I'm not using anything fancy. I'm not using a semi-synthetic or a synthetic. I'm using a conventional oil once a year. And if you do 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year, I'm still going to do that once a year.
It's all 5W30.
That's fine. That's a good oil. But you don't have to go to a premium oil.
Okay.
You just use what brand are you using now?
Well, the man at Napa says that their oil is made by Valvoline.
And that changes year to year. Valvoline used to do Harley-Davidson's, and now they didn't do any more.
Right.
Now, when Valvoline sold a quart of 2050 on the shelf at the auto parts store, it was like $2.
Yeah.
The same oil with a Harley-Davidson can was $5.95.
Right.
Same oil.
Yeah.
And of course, Harley guys go, hey, I ain't going to use nothing but Harley oil. But in reality, they have a primary chain case on those big Harley hogs, and the primary chain case is nothing more than a bicycle chain with two gears. We put oil in there to keep the bicycle chain lubed. Do you know what that oil is inside that primary? It's a lot of money at a Harley shop, but this is the problem. It's a 30 weight. It's a cheap 30 weight. However, the transmission oil on a Harley is a full-blown top-line synthetic oil. That's the one that's worth $6 a quart. But take it for what it's worth.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, thanks, Frank. Bye. All righty, Jeremy. Are we locked and loaded, or are we on the way down?
We got one more, Phil.
Phil, good morning to you, buddy. How are you?
Morning. Good morning. You guys mentioned before if you have a car that sits in the garage a lot, something you should put in it.
A Stabil. You buy it. It's STA, and I think there's a dash DIL.
Yeah.
And you use that. I use that in my lawnmowers, all my gasoline lawnmowers, and my weed eaters and stuff during the winter.
Okay.
Because it doesn't allow the gas to varnish up. It holds the gasoline as a good gasoline, and you'll have less carburetor problems, and it'll start easier come, you know, summertime when you want to use your garden equipment. But Stabil, now, if you're going to store it for, you know, a month or two, it's no big deal. But if you're a winter visitor and it's going to sit here 6 months, that would not hurt to know how many gallons of gas is in your tank and put the appropriate amount of Stabil in your tank.
Okay.
And store it full of fuel, by the way.
Okay, and so best thing to do is if you use some fuel to add some more to it.
Yeah, but I tell the people that leave during the snowbirds, our winter visitors, I tell them the last day or the day before, go drive it. Go take the wife down to the mall, to the outlet malls.
Or take it on the highway.
Exactly, right. Pull into a quick lube facility, have them change the oil and the filter, then and air up the tires to the maximum inflation. Go to the gas station, fill it up, put your Stabil in, put it in your garage, park it, take the key out, roll the windows up, and go. You're full of fresh oil, and you're full of fresh fuel.
And if, as far as gasoline, if you put regular or high test, it doesn't make any difference.
Doesn't make any difference. Now, here's the difference between regular and high test. Okay? The explosion.
Right.
The explosion on regular is like popping a bull balloon with a pen. It's boom. That's it. But higher octane gas gives you this, boom, and then a higher octane gas goes boom. You see what I mean? It's just a harder push. So your motor with a computer probably doesn't see that, but I don't know what you drive, but I'd use regular unless that was a reason you felt like you needed super.
Well, this is a Town and Country 2005, which gets horrible reports from Consumer Reports. I don't know if you found them to be real dogs or not.
They're not my favorite,
right?
But they're still a good van.
Okay.
And if I were you, I'd do the blind test. Are you married?
Yes.
Okay. So you say to her, Saturday you go fill it up, and I'll try to guess what you put in, and then the following Saturday you fill it up, and she tries to guess whether you used regular or super.
Okay.
And you can't tell the difference, I promise.
And if
you,
if you got a chance for one quick question.
Go ahead.
Okay, 2004 Acura, it's that 3.2 liter engine. They're saying you have to burn premium, but when you look it up, the people that have them and reviews and all that kind of stuff, a lot of them say, no, I burn regular or I burn mid-range and I don't see any difference. And the same thing was true if we had a 2004 Murano or 2003. And they said the same
thing. Minutes.
But sometimes when we per regular, it didn't make any difference. So,
well, like I just gave you the test to determine that yourself.
Right.
I want to tell you something. My wife for 9 years drove a Jaguar V8 with a supercharger on it.
Uh-huh.
It said everywhere on that car, only use premium.
Yeah.
I tell everybody I used regular, and Jaguar says, stop telling people that.
Yeah.
And then I had a Corvette.
Right.
I had a 1996 Corvette, and I had a 2005 Corvette, and I tell people I run the cheapest gas I can find, and all the Corvette enthusiast says, oh, his motor won't last long. They don't know I'm the car guy.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is I understand that while they want you to use super because they want you to have power and performance, I have a dynamometer.
Right.
I can measure it. If I'm measuring it, and I'm measuring a tenth of a horsepower, do you really think there's a human being on this earth that's going to be able to tell me that by driving it?
Right.
The fact of the matter is ever since 1981, when we put a computer control on the fuel and the spark on a car, it's taken away those controls. So, again, let it go down as low as you dare. Put in a half a tank of something and drive it and see if you can guess what it is. You can't. That Acura can use regular gasoline. Now, the only time I'd change it is I might, if I had four buddies in the car and all of our golf clubs, and I knew that I wanted to race the Volvo next to me, I might put some high test in it. That would be the only reason. And I don't drag race on the road. All right, the rest of you, thank you very much, Phil. The rest of you, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Send me an email. You have a car question, I personally answer every single one of them. mark@marksalem.com. Our FAQs are at marksalem.com. You can go there and look. We also have the best car repair shops there. All over the valley, paint and body, mechanical, transmission, tires. Good guys, promise they'll do a good job. I'm Mark Salem. I'll see you next Saturday, 10 to noon, right here.